Hello and good evening. I'm Lissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The MyStatra app was initially developed for free to help the health ministry monitor the spread of COVID-19. It was designed to allow for contact tracing while providing users with the necessary information on their COVID-19 risk status, as well as preventative measures required to be taken. Now, more than a year after it was released, the functions have expanded. It's now the main registration method for the National COVID-19 Immunization Program, and it also provides the digital record for vaccination certificates. So yesterday it was announced that Putrajaya will now have to start paying the developer of the app for its continued use. The developer is KPI Soft Syndrome Berhad. Tonight we're going to discuss the issues of utility, access and privacy that surrounds the app now that the app is used almost exclusively to manage COVID-19 pandemic administration. Our first guest tonight is Karamjit Singh. He's the founder and CEO of Digital News Asia, which is an independent news portal that covers the ICT ecosystem. Karam, good evening. Thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Now, let's begin with the news that the government now has stopped paying for the continued use of MyStatra. What do you make of this news, Karam? I mean, does it raise any points of concern to you?
I would say that it is overdue, man. You know, these guys have done an incredible job. I love the name of your show, right? Consider This. I would ask your viewers, right, not your readers, watchers, yeah, to consider this. Like, the story of MyStatra and the company behind it is one of the great untold technology stories of Malaysia. But just so few people know about this, and the company and the founders behind it, their hands are tied because, you know, you've got the Majlis Keselamatan Negara, you know, under the ambit of the emergency, right, spearheading things. They cannot tell you a lot of things. And I know you were trying to get them on to be a guest on the show, but they just couldn't come on. So the true story, depth of the story, the challenges they have faced is not evident to Malaysia yet, but one day soon it will be, and people will be proud to say that, wow, this is a Malaysian company that did this. So really, that's what's the really cool thing about
Okay, so Karam, so you're kind of celebrating the entrepreneurship and you think entrepreneurship in the country should be rewarded. I agree completely with you. But the issue of transparency, I think, is key to the story as well, isn't it? I mean, what contract was there with the company? And if so, I mean, for how long, especially, is there an exit strategy for the use of MyStatra?
So look. The contract. Look, what I know is that, just for a backstory, right? The Malaysian government, or some officials, Ministry of Health, were in a meeting with the WHO, right, back in like February or March of last year, talking about this issue and what we need to do. And that it was the WHO people who say, hey, wait a minute, you know, you've got a Malaysian entrepreneur, a Malaysian company, right, that's already got a platform that you can use. The Malaysian party didn't know about this, so they got in touch with them. And that was how it came about. There was no sinister agenda or, you know, some undertable, you know, deal, and these guys put themselves there. They were the government that was in a dire strait, right, because this was a major pandemic, you know, and people were panicking, never experienced this before. They needed to get an app to start monitoring, right, Malaysians, all of us, where we're going and what's happening, and to try to contain the pandemic. And they evaluated a few products, right, and they ended up picking this because there was no time to get someone to develop it from scratch. And the basis of this company called KPI Soft, actually, they have renamed themselves, right? And by the way, the previous name, KPI Soft, imagine that, right? Key performance in check. This was a performance management company in Malaysia, yeah, Sharad. And they were already had an op, and they were using something called augmented analytics, right? Augmented analytics means you're getting the data at a much faster speed than it is shared with everyone in the organization.
So, Karam,
it is a very strong technology product already that they just ported over. They reskinned it. They reskinned it for the health service because there was a dire need. And they were selected by the government, right? It's not just one party there. They looked at a few. They said, you guys are the ones who can do it the quickest. Okay, sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
Okay, yes. So do you think that the MyStatra app is a successful app for what it was designed for. Are you saying, I mean, I would like you to address the criticisms that have been thrown to the MyStratra app, that it failed at contact tracing, that it didn't have push notifications, that there were lots of buggy issues. How would you address those criticisms?
Look, I think, you know, in the world we live in now, the noisy doesn't, you know, have a bigger say and influence than the happy, you know, 1.2 million, since we're using a dozen, right? If you go to the iStore and you go to the App Store and look at the ratings, right? The ratings are above 4.5. So what does that tell you? So this is not true that, you know, this app is the buggy and all that, right? And also, by the way, you know, June 6th of last year, they suddenly had 1 million people registering on the app. You know what happened June 6th last year? The government suddenly mandated that every time when you go out somewhere, you must register, right? You must scan a QR code to enter a store. They didn't do the scan out yet. Can you imagine your app suddenly getting 1 million registrations? From what I understand, the system literally was shaking with that many, you know, interactions, you know, coming in. So actually, technologically wise, the app has done incredibly well for a situation where they were unprepared for the huge numbers. And one quick point, our government, Melissa, has launched about 50 apps, you know, over the last few years. The most popular app, among the top 10 apps, I think the most popular was an app called MySPL. And I'm sorry, I don't know what SPL is. It was 1.2 million downloads. MySejahtera hit 6.2 million 12 weeks after it was launched. So I would be happy to go online, you know, and debate with people if they said that this app is a disgrace, we could have done better and all. In the dire circumstances, and I think once the team are under the MKN, when they can, because there's a COVID task force, right? And these people meet every day, okay? There's like a group of about 16 of them. They will tell you how, you know, they are thankful they are for MyStratra, what they've done. And what they've done, by the way, is way more than what they were supposed to. They didn't expect it to be so wildly popular, right? It was uncharted territory back in April, March of 2020, when they were said, okay, we're going to use your app, go ahead and reskin it and customize it for our needs, right? It's totally uncharted territory, what they have done. It's incredible.
Okay, so I get. So Karim, coming back to the question of transparency and what we should pay for this, because there is a question always of accountability, right? This is public money that's going to be spent. You already, in some sense, answered the bang for buck question. You think it's been good bang for the, but we don't know what the buck is yet.
Yeah.
And I think that is also troubling.
But you know, that's only going to be determined. I mean, they're going to start charging them. They're going to start paying them in April of next year, correct? So there's, and I guarantee you the details will come out. From what I understand, it's still early stages of trying to assess how much they should be paid, right? And the level of further upgrades to the app. Like you said, there are some things that can probably be done better, right? And for example, maybe people would like to know that they're about to enter hotspot, right? Before they enter it and they, hey, wait a minute, there were like, you know, 15, you know, people who were in self-isolation now after entering this mall or this office building. Maybe I don't need to go there. So there are things that they'll be asked to do further in exchange for the money they'll be paid. And they've been doing it for free for so far. Imagine if anyone out there who knows the hosting, right, cost that you have to do from hosting it when they were like, 12,000 downloads a day to where you've got like now, I think they're way beyond 6.6 million, right? Probably everybody in Malaysia plus their grandparents have the app now. Imagine the cost they are bearing on the back end and the team they need resources to support it. So when the real story comes up, people are going to say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And I'm willing to stake my reputation on it. Sorry, Karim, stupid fellow, why are you saying this all? You don't know, right? Really, you know. And when you meet the entrepreneur, Ravi, right, Sharon, I mean, and Melissa, if you've met geeky people before who are technical, they're a bit of a different breed, right? The one time only I met him and he wanted to, like, they were surprised by the pushback by society, right? Not society, yet, the noisy dozen in social media. Hey, what's going on? Why are people not appreciating what they're doing? He's sitting across the table from me then, and we both had our masks on, right? This was like in May or June. And I think halfway during the discussion, he had actually, like, slouch halfway down under the table, you know. He's like, you know, hey, I'm interacting with someone. They probably don't like to meet with people. And I had a camera in a slow motion, you know, timer. It was amazing.
Right.
Like, hey, Ravi, you can, why are you like this?
Right. Karam, thank you for being on the show tonight, joining us and sharing your perspectives. We appreciate your time. That was Karam Jitsingh of Digital News Asia. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the issue of MySajatra. Stay tuned. Hello, you're watching Consider This. I'm Lisa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. If you've just joined us on the show, tonight we're discussing the MySajatra app. We're discussing whether the app has proven its worth. Joining us on the show tonight is Dr. Lau Chia Han. He's the chief data scientist and CEO of LEAD, which is a tech institute that provides programs on data science and analytics. He's also the founder of coronatracker.com, which is an open source portal for COVID-19 data and analysis. Chia Han, welcome to the show. Appreciate you being with us tonight. How would you assess the effectiveness of the MySajatra app if you, you know, take into account what it was designed for, that is alerting users for their risk category and perhaps to contact trace? I mean, how would you assess its capability?
I think from a user standpoint, MySajatra does its job very well. And if you compare it with other apps, right, it's very fast and responsive, and it does not cause too much of a usage on our data, so to speak, right? So, but I think from a citizen point of view, also we need to think about a good balance between the speed and also reliability. So a lot of people are saying it is not really notifying us when things happen, but you have to think about it. Say, if we think about the worst case scenario last time when we still have 20,000 open cases per day, and it's really pointless to keep reminding us that we're in the red zone. So what I see in terms of the gaps is that the change of status, right? It will give us some relief, right? It will make us happy if we go from red zone to yellow and from yellow to green, and it tells us that we should be more alert when it goes from yellow to red. So I think this year would be a good starting point that we see more notifications when it comes to using the app.
Chan, there are issues beyond the question of functionality and user interface. I think I take your point on that. But in terms of, you know, the options that the government had going into the crisis, and I know there's a sense of urgency, but what other strategies could have been used? I mean, should we have gone for a single platform strategy? Could we have had multiple platforms? We know there were actually other apps like Sri Lanka that were also being offered. In terms of the choices that were made over technology in a public health crisis scenario, could we have done it differently?
I think this is the case where you don't want to say, oh, we are spoiled by choices, right? So I think we should stick to MySajatra, because at this sort of scenario, we don't want to have too many apps, and because they are not sharing data among each other, and they are not supposed to, because it's a very sensitive, personal, private information. So we should be using a single app, and this app should tie to a centralized anonymized database. That means it should have a unique identifier that's able to tell who you are if somebody wants to find out. But for somebody who gained unauthorized access to the database, to them it's just a piece of scrambled numbers or scrambled strings, and they wouldn't be able to figure out what it is. So this should be the best practice if we were to move forward.
Okay, well, speaking about best practices, I mean, if you were to look at other countries, I'm just wondering what their process has been. I mean, how have they utilized similar apps? For us, the story of MySajatra has been one that was tied to CSR. We heard Karam a little bit earlier talking about how this was free, done for free, and, you know, an effort on a company's part, but now the government is going to pay for it. I mean, what have other countries done, and what have you observed to be best practices done there?
So when we look at this, right, the MySajatra app is pretty much just the front end of the entire process. But what we are really discussing here is the entire contact tracing practice, because it involves tracing, the vaccination, the reporting process, and also testing. But like I mentioned earlier, right now, every single process, they are all separated. The data are kept in silos. It's not in a bad way, but it's just that we haven't found a reliable way to link them up together. So in some other countries, a common practice that we use is actually Bluetooth tracing. So it's used to notify, let's say, when the maximum number of people in a particular place, like a restaurant or the shopping mall, they're reaching its limit, especially in a large confined space. And Bluetooth is actually a more privacy-preserving option and less invasive compared to GPS. And it also involves other parts of it, like education and information, educating the public. So these are some of the things that we have observed, and it should be done better in the future versions.
John, I wonder, for us who are, you know, not in the in that space, right, in terms of tech and AI and such, I mean, the cost is an interesting one, because from the narrative that we have, this was first offered free. Now you have a company that essentially has a monopoly, you know, working on behalf of the government, but a monopoly nevertheless. And how do you price something like this? I mean, the government is perhaps, and some critics have pointed out, the government's hands are tied. They are now forced into a relationship with this company for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So a bit about background of this company, KPIsoft, that developed this MySejahtera app. They're actually a company with a bit of track record in Malaysia. They have developed quite a number of HR attendance-taking apps for some of the MNCs, some of the organizations, if you take a look at it. So I think what people are not so comfortable with is the process of, you know, like, awarding a tender to them or not. And also we have some other tech guys in the open source community, like what recently Webby KG has done with the MOH portal, right? So people will have thoughts like that. So I think I will zoom it down to a couple of areas. It's number one, the storage of the data. Imagine you have, you know, the whole country, a lot of people going out and, you know, carrying out activities, and every single activity you need to check in. You imagine the amount of data that is there to store the data, to analyze the data. And a lot of times that people didn't really take into consideration, it's not about the cost to develop the app, but it's the cost to maintain the app because of the bandwidth, storage, and also subsequent support, upgrades, the functions and the features and stuff.
Right. Chahan, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. That was data scientist Dr. Lau Chahan. We're going to take another quick break. We will be back with more. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We'll continue our discussion now on the MySejahtera app. It's been more than a year since it's been released. Now the government will have to start paying the developer of the app, KPIsoft, for continued use. I believe the payment will be backdated to April of this year. Now, what are the trade-offs involved in the route that the government has taken in using digital technology to manage this public health crisis? We have joining us now Jack S.M. Key. She is the co-director of the Centre for Independent Journalism Malaysia, better known as CIJ. Jack, good evening. Is it enough that the developers of MySejahtera have assured the public that when it comes to personal data protection, that they are fully compliant with the Personal Data Protection Act and the Infectious Diseases Prevention and Control Act? I mean, is that enough? Are you reassured?
Well, the PDPA, Personal Data Protection Act, is actually an act that is already quite weak to begin with. And it has several limitations as we speak. So to say that it's fully compliant with it, I'm wondering what that means. Because the PDPA, number one, doesn't apply to any federal or state government agency. So I'm not sure who actually is the data steward in this case. Is the data steward the Ministry of Health, in which case PDPA doesn't apply, or is the data steward this particular corporation, KPI Software? Are they being paid for the development of the app, or are they being paid for the processing of data, both of which are very different things? And in which case, is this now considered a commercial is this now considered a kind of like commercial transaction that we are having between ourselves and KPI Software? And what have we consented to? So I think there's a lot of grey areas and a lot of questions that we have to answer before we can even enter to the question of whether compliance to PDPA is enough. But just as a baseline, PDPA as a law for data protection is already a very weak law, and it's not one that is sufficiently robust in order to protect our personal data and in order to protect especially sensitive, personally sensitive data such as information about geolocation, about movement, about health that is trackable to specific individuals for extensive periods of time.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, I wonder if many people are aware of what they're handing over when they either download the app or use it extensively in their daily lives. Could you help us just quickly sketch what is it that's at stake here? I mean, people might say, I don't care if the government knows I've gone to X, Y, and Z restaurants or beauty salons or whatever it is. What exactly, you know, is your concern?
It's a trade-off, right? You're saying, okay, look, I will allow the government to have access to where I'm going and the status that I'm going if the trade-off of that is that that COVID will be managed and that infection will stop spreading and that the cases will go down and that we will be able to get access to health. And this information is temporary and will be purged and will not impact me in any other way other than this particular trade-off. But that's not the case at the moment. No, because we are, number one, we're not even sure the efficacy of MySujatra in terms of a contact tracing app to help us in terms of managing our health service, our public health service. We've just come down a little bit from the worst scenario. I mean, yeah, one of the sort of like peak moments of how the nightmare of COVID where hospitals are over, overflowing and so I don't know whether it's actually been effective for us to then go, this is the most useful thing. I know your question is, so what, right? So what if somebody, so what if the government knows where I'm going? I don't really care. There is no other central agency in the world. Yeah, okay, let's just put it this way. Imagine your parents, when you are growing up, knows exactly where you go, who you hang out with, and at any time, how long you spend there, and at which places you go at all times, because they have an app tracking you. Is that acceptable? Okay.
Well, I'm glad my mother didn't have a MySujatra app for me when I was growing up, to be completely honest with you. But Jack, I want to kind of move the conversation very quickly away from the data and the privacy concerns, but also to talk about the access concerns. So MySujatra is, you know, I'm talking about the segment of the population that might be digitally excluded as we increase our dependence on this one app. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, not only in terms of, we don't have 100% internet connectivity access to begin with, number one, no? We are really building, we have a techno-solutionist approach to dealing with a pandemic when we actually need to, we are investing all of our resources and all of our attention to technology and to one company when we should actually be investing on health infrastructure, not technology infrastructure. So by health infrastructure, this means, you know, we need to invest in contact tracing that is actually being peopled by people calling you and finding out and following up. These are things which actually has been recommended by WHO as being really critical as part of health surveillance. So it's not just about the technology, it's also about the people. It's also about the processes behind it. It's about building more hospitals. It's about making test kits freely available and accessible so that you can regularly do self-tests and self-assessments. What we know that has worked is the kind of like solidarity infrastructure, right? We know that we have been, the things that have worked is within, like, say, I don't know, in a community, you know that, oh, okay, this person is, this particular household has COVID, so let's just take care of each other. That has worked. But MySujatra is kind of like, it's like a band-aid to make us psychologically feel a little bit better. And as you say, not everybody has connection to the internet, and not certainly not everybody has a smartphone, and you cannot compel. Okay. It's actually, yeah. I'm just going to finish with this one point. It's actually, you can't compel somebody to subject themselves to a, you know, continuous surveillance system in the name of public health, regardless, without any safeguard. That is dependent upon the technology platform that you are not providing along with this compulsion. So that's boleh lah. Okay.
Yeah, I get your point, Jack. I just wonder if that's how the do they feel that in fact because of the ways in which Mysajata is used and how they could perhaps be prevented from accessing services and goods, that they need to, regardless of their personal position, adopt it. Is there any strategy you would suggest to people who are uncomfortable with the use of Mysajatra?
I think if the government wants to mandate and make Mysajatra the kind of like intermediary thing for you to be able to access things and like, you know, be able to just conduct your daily life, then there needs to be at minimum a security audit and then some kind of like, you know, demonstration that this works. It's false voluntary adoption when actually if you don't adopt it, you can't move. It basically means you are forced to adopt it. So what does that mean? That means that people who are already, who are already excluded, who are already marginalized, stuff that you're alluding to, who are already in places where, you know, access, connectivity, infrastructure is not great, will be facing double exclusion, you know? Like, will be further discriminated and will face further kind of, like, inability to access health services, plus.
Right. Jack, yeah. Thank you for being on the show tonight. Well, we've run out of time, but that was Jack SMQ from Center of Independent Journalism Malaysia wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.